This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review, dated August 11th, 2015. We'll continue now with another article about crime and the courts. The headline is Shooting Victim Dies, Suspect in Custody. A 20-year-old man has died from injuries he sustained after being shot early Sunday morning, Decatur police said in a news release. Authorities said they have a suspect in custody on a preliminary charge of homicide. Decatur police responded to a call of shots being fired in the 800 block of East Prairie Avenue shortly after 1 a.m. Sunday. The victim was taken to a Decatur hospital before being transferred to an area hospital. He died Sunday night, police said. The investigation is ongoing. Anyone with information about the shooting can call Decatur Police at 217-424-2711 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. We'll turn now to a reading of the obituaries. Justin Lee Baker, 34, of Shelbyville, passed unexpectedly in a car accident at 9:20 p.m. Thursday, August 6th. A funeral service celebrating his life will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, August 13th, 2015, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 1 Bachrach, Decatur. Visitation will be held Wednesday, August 12th, from 5 to 8 p.m., also at the church. Burial will take place in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be made to Megan Baker and family at any Land of Lincoln Credit Union or any Busey Bank. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangement. Timothy Joseph Gore, 75, of Decatur, passed away August 9th in Decatur Memorial Hospital, surrounded by his family. A mass of Christian burial will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, August 12th, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 11th, 2015, with liturgical prayers recited at 4:30 p.m. at Morin and Gerbel Funeral Home. Burial will be in St. Mary's Cemetery in Peasodom. Memorials may be directed to American Diabetes, Alzheimer's Association, or Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Ardith C. Kaler, 85, of Decatur, passed away Friday, August 7th at her home, surrounded by her family. Graveside services to celebrate the life of Ardith Kaler will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 12th, at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Springfield. Memorials may be directed to the family. Darlene M. Mason, 83, of Altamont, was taken to her heavenly home on Sunday, August 9th at HSHS St. John's Hospital, Springfield, with her family at her side. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 12th at Giesking Funeral Home, Brownstown. Burial will follow at Old Luguti Cemetery, rural Fayette County. Visitation will be for 2 hours prior to service time at the funeral home on Wednesday. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. Zachary Zach Todd Morgan, 27 of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, August 9th. A service to celebrate and honor his life will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, August 14th, at Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, August 13th, at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest at Mount Gilead Cemetery. Memorials can be made to the Salvation Army. We'll turn now to the Columns and Opinions page. Hasty voting created pension mess. And this is an editorial by the Decatur Herald and Review editorial staff. Making important decisions in a hurry often leads to mistakes. That's certainly true in the case of Illinois state government, which made a series of last-minute decisions over the years that led to the current pension crisis. Dave McKinney, in a special report published last week in Crain's Chicago, outlines how the state's pension system evolved into its current state. The story is recommended reading and shows how decisions often made in haste have created long-term problems. There are many actions that resulted in the current pension mess, but these missteps can be boiled down to a couple of practices that future legislatures should avoid. Hasty decision. McKinney illustrates how a bill approved 10 years ago has accelerated the state's pension problem. This complicated 78-page bill was given to lawmakers 2 days before adjournment. The Democrats that controlled the legislature rushed it through in order to adjourn the session, and it was signed by then-Governor Rod Blagojevich. At the time of the debate, estimates were that the bill would save the state $35 billion. What wasn't mentioned was that the bill allowed the state to skip 2 pension payments entirely and to move some other costs into the future. An analysis of the bill's impact was not done until 2 months after it became law, and although it created some true reforms, it also worsened an already troubled pension situation. Governor Jim Thompson's administration also added to the system's woes by approving a 3% compounded annually cost of living increase for all retirees. It's estimated that decision alone has added more than $1 billion to the state's unfunded liability, and Thompson said if he would have known the cost, he would not have signed the bill. Pleasure now, pain later. The other theme in this debacle is the willingness of all involved to enjoy putting more money into state government now and delaying pension payments until later. This started in the administration of Governor Jim Edgar, who pushed through what has become known as the RAMP to address pension payments. This allowed lower payments into the pension system in the early years, with the payments ramping up in later years. Edgar said the governors that followed him should have made adjustments to the plan. And there were many times when no or partial payments were made into the system in order to put more money into education and other services, in some cases with the full consent of labor unions representing public employees. Learning painful lessons from the past will not help solve the current pension issue, but it may help the state avoid similar mistakes in the future. And this is a copyrighted editorial by the Herald and Review. Let's take a look now at what some of the syndicated columnists have to say. This is a letter to Dear Abby. Dear Abby, a family member has recently lost more than 100 pounds running and doing yoga. She looks fantastic. Yoga is the focus of her life now, and she posts daily photos of herself on social media. In many of them, she is scantily clad and in poses some might consider risque. Whenever she attends family gatherings or outings in public places, she wants to take pictures of herself in various poses. This makes some of the people she's with uncomfortable. She says she doesn't care what others think, but there have been quite a few negative comments about this, and people have unfollowed her on social media. Others think it's okay for her to do her thing. What is your opinion on this? And the letter is signed Gagging in Georgia. Dear Gagging, your relative deserves praise for having adopted a healthier lifestyle. However, because she doesn't care what others think, any family member who finds her pictures too risque for their comfort should quit following her on social media. The next letter. Dear Abby, my daughter Kelly and I are arguing over whether she should take her trophies with her when she moves out on her own. I feel that when kids move out, they should take all their belongings. Kelly thinks I should keep the 10 to 15 trophies she won in beauty pageants when she was younger. I'd like to turn her bedroom into a guest room where visiting relatives can stay, but I'm having difficulty getting my daughter to take all her stuff. Although she has grown out of her childhood trophies, she expects me to hold on to them. I suggested she pack them up and store them in her attic so she can show her children her accomplishments one day. What do you think? Signed, Beauty Queen's Mom in Indiana. Dear Mom, I think that if you want a guest room instead of a shrine to your daughter's beauty contest achievements, you should set a deadline and insist that her trophies be removed. And finally, this letter. Dear Abby, a friend of mine and I have exchanged birthday cards for many years. Several years ago, she started sending me two cards each year, one on my birthday and another 5 or 6 months later. After a couple more years passed, the second date became the only card she sent. I know I should have said something, but I didn't want to embarrass her. This year, on my birthday, she even called to wish me a happy one. Is there anything I can do now? My real birthday is coming up soon, and I feel bad that I didn't nip this in the bud in the beginning. Signed, One at a Time in Washington. Dear One, oh, for Pete's sakes. Friends should be able to level with each other without ruining the friendship. If you want to save her from embarrassment, tell her you are embarrassed because you didn't say something earlier. Then enjoy a good laugh together. Tim Kaine, H&R Entertainment Editor, has this small article. Jim Varel reaches out for Wiener News. Former Herald and Review staffer Jim Varel left here about a year ago and works for Paste Magazine in Georgia. He's doing a number of the things he did here, writing about movies, craft beer, and fast food. A recent piece he did on Long John Silver's resulted in an email from the business's CEO, one Varel called very diplomatic and nice. Included in the Paste story is the video short he did for the Herald and Review, ordering and consuming the since-abandoned Big Catch basket. Varel and I still exchange notes here and there about movies, music, and other ridiculous things we both enjoy. So I shouldn't have been surprised, although I was, after I sent a tweet quoting the lovely Mrs. Kaine before Saturday's Heinkel's hot dog eating contest at Celebration. I miss watching the hot dog eating contest with at Jim Varell. Varell responded almost immediately with questions about the winner and hot dogs consumed. I couldn't have imagined it any other way. H&R Senior Copy Editor Dick Dacre has this article followed by a quiz. It's called In Praise of Thumbs. Who'd think that the humble thumb would be so interesting? Creating Smarty Pants quizzes on this subject was intriguing but frustrating. Here's what I'm excited about. The name Charles Perrault now means something to me. Offhand, you'd think he was Catherine Deneuve's co-star in so many exciting French films, but that's just silly talk. Perrault, in fact, was the father of Little Red Riding Hood, Sleeping Beauty, and Cinderella. What does that have to do with thumbs, you may well ask? Well, I was composing a question about Thumbelina and had to give some alternate answers to Hans Christian Andersen. The brothers Grimm and Lewis Carroll came to mind easily enough, but who for a fourth? Googling famous fairy tale writers, I came upon Monsieur Perrault. He's a 17th century Frenchman whose 1697 volume was Stories or Tales from Times Past with Morals, with the added title to the frontispiece, Tales of Mother Goose. The stories inside captured folk tales that had had a rich oral tradition, then given a poetic turn and sprinkled with lessons to teach their young audience. By the way, some have thought the glass slippers really should have been fur slippers. That's based on the similarity between the French words for glass, verre, spelled V-E-R-R-E, and a type of fur, V-A-I-R. But glass makes for a much better story, don't you think? When you talk about thumbs, you could think about hitchhiking. Now you'd think you'd be able to determine pretty easily where it's legal to thumb a ride, but you'd be wrong. Google let me down. Some references said the federal government leaves it up to the states to decide on hitchhiking. One site even listed the states it said had blanket bans, and Illinois wasn't one of them. Why take a chance? Don't try this on the road. You'd further think you could snag a definitive list of animals with opposable thumbs. Wrong again. There's agreement on chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans, but then it gets hairy. Opossums have toes on their hind feet that help them grip branches. Not exactly a thumb. Giant pandas have a bony portion of their wrist bone that they use like an opposable thumb to grasp bamboo. No thumb. Where to draw the line? Try doing that without a thumb, by the way. By any rule of thumb, this has gone on long enough. I will invite you to research Tom Thumb. It's a terrific story. He would make a dynamite reality TV. I put the phrase in quotes because I don't think there's anything the least bit real in those shows. Now we'll turn to Dick Zaker's quiz about thumbs, and he's titled this quiz, Twiddle These Thumbs. I'll go through the questions and then give the answers later. The first question, what's a thumb drive? Number two, when did Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel start their thumbs upping and downing? Oh, he gives some choices for this one. A, 1965, B, 1975, C, 85, D, 95. Number 3. Who was responsible for making General Tom Thumb a national sensation? Number 4. What is it called when you have a general procedure based on experience or practice? 5. When you're trying to fit in, what do you not want to do? Now that you've had time to think about those, here are his answers. What's a thumb drive? It's a portable, small device for storing computer data. For number 2, the answer for Ebert and Siskel is 1975. They were sparring partners with each other until Siskel died in 1999. Number 3. P.T. Barnum made a fortune by dressing up Charles Sherwood Stratton in a military outfit and taking his act through America and Europe. The gimmick? Stratton was just a shade over 2 feet tall. So that was General Tom Thumb. Number 4, a general procedure based on experience is a rule of thumb. And number 5, when you're trying to fit in, you do not want to stick out like a sore thumb. We'll take a look now to the Decatur Tribune online. And this is an article written by Paul Osborne, and he titles it, A Memorable Experience at Dairy Queen. I was sitting in the South Shore's Dairy Queen recently when I happened to notice that a man sitting with his back to me in an adjoining booth reminded me of someone I knew. I couldn't see his face, just the back of his head that for some reason looked so familiar. It was probably someone I met covering a story for the newspaper. I tried to listen to the sound of his voice, but he was talking to the woman with him in a soft tone, so I didn't pick up a clue there. Obviously, I wasn't going to tap him on the shoulder and ask him to turn around because I thought he might be someone I know. So when it didn't appear that he was going to get up and leave for a while, and I needed to get going, I dumped the contents of my tray in the trash barrel and walked out of my way so I could circle back and see the man's face as I was leaving. As I walked toward the booth, the man looked up, and I almost audibly gasped when I saw his face. It was the face of my father, who passed away 13 years ago. My father was in his early 90s when he died in 2002, but the man's face was that of my father's face when he was in his mid-60s, about the time he retired from Caterpillar. The man had the same look in his eyes, smile, amount of hair, and other characteristics that my father had at that age. It was eerie. I didn't stop to tell the man that he looked just like my deceased father looked back in 1975. I walked on and out to my car without looking back. When I got inside my car, I sat there for a few minutes and certainly felt an emotional tug at the heartstrings because of what I had just seen. I had experienced something very unusual. The man had more than a resemblance to my dad. It seemed he was my dad, and if I would have seen him in Dairy Queen 40 years ago, I would have mistakenly called him Dad. I've thought a lot about my experience in the days since it happened. Now I regret not making some kind of contact with him while walking by his booth, even though it might have been awkward. I had never seen the man before, and I haven't seen him since, although I've looked for him during the few times I've been back to Dairy Queen. He and the woman with him could have been just passing through Decatur and stopped to eat or visiting relatives here and decide to go to Dairy Queen and have gone back home to another state or even another country. I doubt if I will ever go into that Dairy Queen again without glancing around to see if he is there. Relating this incident is not meant to make any kind of a statement that sounds like an episode from the old Twilight Zone television series. I'm just writing about what and who I saw and my reaction to it. I think it touched me because I still miss seeing my dad and mom, even though they've been gone for many years. It's also been a period of time for a lot of introspection, as I've lost a number of longtime friends during the past year. I think when those we love and care about pass away, we become more sensitive not only to their departure, but to our own mortality, and also realize that we won't see them again on this earth. Maybe that's why we see physical appearances, familiar mannerisms, and reactions in even strangers that help keep our memories of them alive, because they touch our hearts in a special way. I guess it's good that I didn't talk to the gentleman who was identical in looks to my dad. If I had found out that his name was Sam and his wife's name was Betty, I might have passed out and fallen on the floor, right there in Dairy Queen. Finally, here's an article from the Herald and Review's Weird News section. And the dateline is Camden, New Jersey. This is an AP story. Headline, Bunk on a Battleship During Pope's Philadelphia Visit. Visitors looking for a place to stay during Pope Francis's trip to Philadelphia have an unusual option. The Battleship New Jersey is offering 400 bunks for $75 per person for a night between September 22nd and September 26th. Those are the same bunks where sailors slept. The price includes breakfast and dinner. Guests also will get a tour of the ship and a ride in a flight simulator. But there are no showers available. The ship is docked in Camden, across the river from Philadelphia, and less than a mile from the Ben Franklin Bridge. The bridge will be closed to traffic, but open to pedestrians and bicyclists during the Pope's visit. The battleship was launched on the anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack. This has been Carol Bond with the August 11th, 2015 issue of the Decatur Herald and Review, plus the Decatur Tribune. I look forward to reading with you again.